Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. One of our recurring guests on this program is Kenneth Senny, who is a licensed attorney and an adjunct professor in the Department of Recording Industry. And what we usually talk about are legal issues associated with the ever-changing technology in the acquisition of music by the consumer, a.k.a. the digital world. And we're going to explore a few of the latest issues regarding that right now with Ken. Thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me.
Especially on this stormy day.
Yeah.
It's stormy as we tape, at any rate. Something I talked to you on the phone about before, like a week or two ago, before we started taping, is a website called Last FM, which is now paying unsigned artists that don't have a label, royalties for every song that's played on the service. The idea being to bypass Sound Exchange, which is this royalty collecting organization, and also serve as an outlet for alternative artists who don't have a label or enough money to afford heavy duty promotion or anything like that. Is this a revolutionary development? I mean, we know there are already websites with independent artist music up. People put their tunes on MySpace and Facebook and all kinds of things. But tell me why this could be a dramatic change if it catches on.
Well, I think one of the very interesting things that's going on right now is the old system of doing business in the music world is being revolutionized every single day. It's very, very interesting right now, everything that's going on from the digital world to even how the brick and mortar businesses do business. Last FM's owned by CBS. They were just purchased recently by CBS. And they're throwing behind Last FM. CBS is throwing behind Last FM a lot of their clout and a lot of their money and trying to do things a little bit differently. You're starting to see this across the board in the music industry is these new business models popping up, trying to monetize music right now. Because music, the monetization of music or how to make money with music is becoming very difficult. When it started with Napster and digital downloads and the thefts off the internet, you're seeing CD sales drop dramatically. You're seeing downloads increase, but paid downloads are not making up for that loss of revenue from theft. So you're starting to see a lot of companies get into the game. You're starting to see the companies who've been in the game for a long time change how they do business. And this is just one example. I think it does revolutionize some things because it's allowing a lot more artists to have access to the consumers in a broader perspective. Because what you would usually have in the old system is bands would go out and they'd tour. And they'd tour locally until they started doing well enough to tour regionally and then hopefully tour nationally once they end up with a label and producing an album. You're starting to see the internet kind of cut that off a little bit. Touring is still important. It's still important to artists to get out there and be in front of their fans and test their material, but they're actually being able to get in front of their fans in a lot cheaper way over the internet, where you don't have the expense of creating CDs or albums or tapes or whatever the medium was at one point in time. You don't have those large expenses up front to produce something. You can put it out on the internet relatively inexpensively and let the consumers decide what is best by just hearing everything that's out there.
Well, right now, Last FM is paying the going internet radio royalty rate. Are they going to have to do better if they expect to grow?
That's, I think, yet to be determined. I don't think, you know, they're going to have some difficulties luring people away. If you have if you're an artist or a band and you have a deal with Sony, your deal is your deal, and you can't leave that until it's done. And I'm sure Sony's going to do everything to try to keep you. So there could be some bidding wars that go on as players enter the market and try to take some of the artists and some of those away from some of the major record labels. What you have right now, though, is from what Last FM's trying to do is they're trying to develop some of their own artists with getting these new acts who maybe have have been passed on by the labels, by the major labels like Sony or Universal, and trying to promote them. In essence, building a farm club is really, to use the baseball analogy, whether they start putting a lot of their finances and clout behind what they're trying to do to lure some of the more major acts away from the labels. I could see that. It could create a bidding war, but I think right now we're going to have to wait and see how that turns out.
Well, right now, of the 170,000 signups they have, 30% are labels, presumably smaller labels that don't have the money for extensive promotion, advertising, and A&R guys and that kind of thing. If this thing really takes off, CBS could end up owning some of those labels.
They could, and CBS has the resources to do deals with those labels, to go into partnership, and I'm not really sure on the resources to purchase the labels or the size of those. You know, Universal's owned by Vivendi, but you have a lot of this consolidation going on right now in the music industry. But then there's a lot of players coming in and trying to break into it. What you used to have with the smaller labels is they'd enter distribution deals with the major labels. All the major labels pretty much dominated and controlled and owned the streams of distribution. You know, in other words, how you get a CD from the factory that makes the CD through the streams of distribution out to your stores, out to your brick and mortar stores, so that us, the consumer, can purchase it. Well, that was controlled by the major labels for the longest time and still is to some extent. But you're starting to see these major distribution networks that were controlled, some were owned, some were independent. You're starting to see some of them fold up because there's less product to move. And you've got these big streams of commerce and there's nothing going down the streams because of the digital world. So it gives places like CBS a good way of coming in and administering and doing those types of things, dealing with the smaller labels. Smaller labels aren't beholden to the major labels anymore and their streams of commerce because of everything that's going on. So it's an exciting time in the music industry.
On a totally emotional, visceral level, a lot of independent artists who hate the whole corporate model in American business to begin with are probably going to, you know, be very disappointed that this new revolutionary entity is owned by a humongous corporation. But I guess they'll just have to weigh their values against their pocketbooks and make a personal decision on that order.
Right. Yeah. It always comes down to, you know, there's a lot of people who bemoan corporate America and those types of things. But, you know, we live in a market economy, and that's how artists are paid relatively handsomely to do what they do once they make it. You know, you look back hundreds of years back, and you had patrons who would pay artists and people to, you know, Shakespeare's paid by a patron, I'm sure, to fund his life so that he could sit and write those great works. There's always going to be a market to try to handle this. No artist wants to be a quote-unquote starving artist. They all want to eat and maybe even live in a nice home and those types of things. So the bemoaning of corporate America is usually done by those who are looking for an excuse for why they haven't made it more than the ones who've made it.
Then there's this new online service called FaveTape, FaveTape. If it's pronounced FaveTape or FavTape, I'm not sure which. It brings together Pandora, Last.fm, SeekPod, and SlinkSet. So you can listen back to all your favorite songs on demand in their entirety, which is something you can't do on Last.fm. The thing about it is you can't rearrange all the songs to create the playlist that you want.
Right. We're starting to see this pop up. It's just new ways of using technology. FaveTape, from what I'm familiar with it, I'm not too familiar with it, but I know a little bit about it and read a little bit about it. It's a way of making quote-unquote a mixtape, is from what I've heard. And you're limited to 10 songs, and you can download those 10 songs and burn them onto a CD, but you're limited to 10. And you can kind of make these mixtapes and according to your favorite playlists on Pandora, which is an internet radio site where you can pick the types of music you like, and it's a broadcast music on the internet, but it's a way of actually broadcasting music that is tailored to your taste specifically, you as the listener, not just a like FM station that plays rock music or those types of things. You get to pick the songs you like. And this fave tape, I think, is really what they're trying to do, is give you the opportunity to pick a handful of your favorite songs and to download them or to have them. They also, as I recall, allow you to click onto iTunes and purchase the songs. So this is a great promotional tool to increase sales, because if you're limited to 10 and you want more of your songs, or you want one of those 10 to be taken off of your list so you can put another one on, you may go purchase the song.
And they've got links to iTunes, Amazon, and ringtones under each song.
Right, right. So if you want to make a ringtone of it, you can pay the amount that's going to be charged for the ringtone, or if you wanted to purchase the entire song. And it goes back to just trying to monetize music. We have an entire industry that was based on CD sales and the sale of a physical product in a store, and that's no longer working. So there's all these new and innovative ways of trying to make money off of the music so that we can continue to create music, so that we can continue to pay artists to create music.
But since it doesn't technically host any music, they can avoid getting themselves into legal trouble, right?
No, I don't think so. I'm not really sure about what they have done legally or what kind of setup they have, but they're going to have some type of licensing system or something. When you go to Pandora and you put in your favorite music, let's say you go to Pandora and you type in Johnny Cash and you just want songs by Johnny Cash, you're not going to get just songs by Johnny Cash. Pandora is limited in that it can only play certain songs a certain number of times over a certain time frame. And Pandora will play other songs that are like Johnny Cash. You're going to get other artists who are similar according to the criteria that Pandora uses. Last.fm works the same way. And you can't on Pandora know what song is coming up next, because they don't want you to be able to tape it or to download it or do those types of things, record it in some way for future use. So it is like a terrestrial broadcast radio in that regard. And they're not allowed to tell you what's coming up next. You can see what you've listened to, but you can't see what you're about to listen to. So with this fave tape, they're going to have had some system already in place, or they're going to have to put some system in place, or they're going to get sued, to allow this type of downloading of music. They can't distribute music, even if they're not hosting it. They can't distribute music off of other websites without actually paying the artists or the copyright holders, which is usually a label. The songwriters who are going to be involved, they have a publisher who's going to want their cut of the royalties. So there's going to be some type of royalty system set up to allow those who own the rights to this intellectual property to be compensated for it, and also allow us as the consumer to take advantage of this new and innovative way of doing business.
On to a different issue, which is the musicians' unions. Usually the unions for the musicians negotiate things like health insurance and other benefits. Things like digital rights are negotiated between artist and label. So why don't the unions, like AFTRA, get involved with negotiating the digital rights for the musicians? The precedent's already been set with the Screen Actors Guild, I think, or the Writers Guild, in regard to their going on strike for digital royalties and such. It might not be exactly the same paradigm, but they're looking for, you know, more control over the money they get from digital images of their work, which is, you know, basically the same thing.
Well, anytime you have a change like we've experienced in the last 5 to 10 years in an industry, there's going to be a time that's going to be hard for everybody to kind of catch up. And nobody knows where we're at or where we're going. Everybody has a lot of guesses. I have my own guesses. So you're going to have these changes in the way that business is done, and you're going to have a ripple effect where that's concerned. Now, where the unions are concerned, they're going to be heavily involved in all aspects of that going forward. And if they're not, they become irrelevant. And they know that, and they're smart enough to know that. They've got very good people running their unions. what you're going to see happen is you're going to see the union becoming very involved in what we have now in the music industry called a 360 deal. You used to have, if you were a recording artist, you would sign a recording artist contract. And what that contract would do is it would cover your recording of an album. It would have options for other albums. Sometimes it would, you know, your initial term would be two or three albums maybe, and then have some options for some other albums that the label could exercise the option. And it would cover your going into the studio and recording those albums. It would cover the distribution of those albums. And it would cover your pay for the sale of those albums. Well, what you have now is you have a totally different market system in which you have the downloads and the other things that we've talked about up to this point, and that has changed the entire system. So the labels are trying to recover more money from other areas of the artist's business as an artist, as an entertainer. So what you didn't have covered before is you didn't have merchandise. If an artist was out on the road and performing and selling their concert t-shirts and bumper stickers and all of those types of things, posters, those types of things, merchandising, the label didn't receive any part of that. If they're performing and they're receiving money for performing while they're out selling their merchandising, the label didn't get a part of that. If they ended up parlaying some of their popularity into a guest appearance on a sitcom, the label didn't get any part of that. That sitcom, they may have acted really well and got a movie deal. The label still did not get any part of that. So what the labels have realized is that they've invested a lot of time and money into these artists. Some of the artists make it and some don't. And the label takes a loss on a lot of artists. All the major labels and even some of the secondary labels take losses on more of their artists than the ones who make it. And so what they're trying to do is recover some of their money so that they can put more money into artists, kind of R&D, research and development, artists and repertoire type of stuff where they can build acts. And what they're doing is they're trying to gain some of the money from the artists acting, from the artists merchandising, from the artists performances. And the reasoning behind that is that they want to be able to monetize what they've invested in. They've invested in this entertainer, and they want to recover some of that investment from some of the other streams of revenue the entertainer has. The unions are going to be heavily involved in these types of negotiations, not just with the digital downloads that you mentioned. That's one major aspect of it. But when you look at the 360 deals, there's a lot more involved in the types of deals that are going on in the music industry right now than just recording artist contracts or just digital downloads. It's not just music anymore. It's about the entertainer as an entertainer. And what are they doing and how are they making money?
Okay. Moving on to Borders, which is adding digital downloads to its audiobook offerings. They have offered certain titles for the discounted price of $9.95. That was a limited deal through July 22nd. They're going to be offering downloads of audiobooks via self-serve computer stations at concept stores. They intend to have 14 concept stores nationwide by the end of 2008. What do you think the market is going to be for that? Do you think it's going to be a positive sales tool? And do you think there are going to be enough people who will want to download audiobooks to make it viable for Borders as a revenue enhancer?
Well, that's been a huge debate, is how the digital downloads work when it comes to books, audiobooks, and they're digitizing books now. You can actually read them. I think Amazon has a book reader that you can download a lot of books onto. It's a glare-proof screen that you can read the books on. So you've got the audiobooks, and then you've got the digitized books, and there's a lot of debate as to what the market is for that. Could that market replace paperbacks and paper books and those types of things? You know, you have the hardbacks, paperbacks, and there's argument there, and I don't think anybody knows yet. I think we're going to have to kind of wait and see how that works. The interesting thing with it is books don't translate quite the way music does. It doesn't really matter the medium of music as long as you can hear it. Where it's different when you have a book, you take your favorite summer novel to the beach, and it's a paperback, and you get some sand in it, and you shake it out. If you have an audiobook and you have your iPod, you've got to be a lot more careful in how you treat that iPod at the beach. You don't want to get sand in it and ruin it. Some of the new book readers, where they actually download the digital book and you can read it on these book readers, say that they're very good around sand and water and those types of things, but they won't be as good as a paperback, you know. And even if you ruin a paperback, you spend $7.95 on a paperback, and you know, you ruin your digital reader, that could be a $200 or $300 investment. So I think it's a little different when you start looking at the book world and try to apply some of the lessons we've learned in the music world to books. I don't think it translates quite as well. It's very interesting what's going on. I know a lot of people use the audiobooks with travel. It's there's definitely a market there for it, and it's a very interesting market when you're in the car driving. I love listening to audiobooks myself. I listen to them quite often when I'm driving.
And maybe literary agents are going to have to start negotiating 360 deals for authors. Like, you know, do I get a piece of the action if John Grisham plugs his new book on Charlie Rose?
Yeah, there's going to be, and that's the... That is the most exciting thing right now going on in entertainment is, you know, the digital era that we're in has changed everything, and a lot of people are worried about and scared and angry, and there's a lot of emotion that's attached to it. But when you really look at it and the exciting avenues that it is producing for us, there are doors that are opening as others are closing, and it's very, very exciting time for a young student. I have a lot of students who are just entering into the recording industry. And it's an exciting time. It's a scary time, but an exciting time for them to be doing that, because things are changing and they get to walk into a changing world where, you know, they may know just as much as the people who've been doing it for 15 years, because it's all new to everybody.
Of course, there are some English professors who would probably say kids don't read enough as it is, and this is going to make it worse. But that's another debate for another day, because that's not something you can do anything about.
Right. Yeah, there's no legal legislation against that or trying to promote that. And, you know, I think anytime you expose children, adults, just human beings to art, whether it be the written word, whether it be music, whether it be paintings, I think it's a good thing. The medium is going to change, and it's important that people still continue to read and those types of things. But I think anytime you can use a new vehicle to open up some doors to others, I think that's a bonus. That's a definite benefit for all of us.
Here's this kicker that I warned you I was going to say for you. A Canadian lawyer named Howard Knopf, he specializes in intellectual property. He is raising the question, reportedly, the United States military has used certain songs to torture the detainees at Guantanamo Bay. Music by Eminem and Neil Diamond. I'm not casting aspersions on anybody. but the song Babylon by David Gray apparently is one of the most popular torture songs at Gitmo. So Knopf raises the question, is ASCAP going to have to sue the United States military over royalty rights to the songs they played to torture the detainees at Gitmo? And how does that work with royalty rights, legalities of artists who are not American? Gray happens to be British, because Gitmo, although it is in Cuba, is on quote-unquote American soil. It's an American army base. Is this all just nuts, or does he have a point?
It sounds slightly nuts to me in some regard. You've seen in our criminal justice system the individuals who are detainees down at Guantanamo Bay fight very hard to try to get access to certain videotapes and those types of things. That stuff's starting to surface, but you've seen how hard they've had to fight to get just a little bit of that stuff in a criminal justice system in which defendants have a lot more rights than an individual in a civil lawsuit would have. But you never know. Sometimes the civil lawsuits are the things that break doors open. As far as it being a copyright violation for the U.S. military use it, I'm not really sure how far they're going to get with that.
Well, they say that people have pushed to get royalties out of the music that is played in prisons and nursing homes and people and places like that and hospitals, on the grounds that these are quote unquote public places. Perhaps that is the case in Canada. He is a Canadian. Maybe he's speaking on the basis of Canadian law. I don't know
of any I don't know of any cases or any law that specifically addresses the airplay or the replay of music or television or anything like that in prisons and here in the United States. I would think that if you were going to sue the United States government, anytime you sue a governmental entity, you have to deal with Governmental Tort Liability Act, which is a federal law. This would be the federal government. You'd have to deal with the Federal Governmental Tort Liability Act. And there are limits placed on the government in as far as caps go on how much you can sue them for. And then there are other areas where they are actually immune. There are many areas in the law that the government's just immune from being sued. One of those areas is like for district attorney generals. If they wrongly prosecute somebody, they're actually immune from being sued for that, even if they wrongly did it. Now you have some areas, if it was done with malice, it may waive the types of immunity that may be done, that may be had there. The issue of using this type of music as a means of interrogation or breaking detainees down, or even if they were to call it torture, and even if it did reach that level, I don't know if playing music would technically be considered torture, but maybe there are ways that it could be. I think that they're going to have a very hard and difficult time bringing a civil lawsuit to try to collect royalties on that. I don't see where the violation necessarily may come from. I think they're trying to say that they're broadcasting it without a license. They're playing the music. I don't know if they're broadcasting it in a public way. I don't know if that would fall under, and it's kind of funny for me to even think about it, a fair use. I don't think it would fall under a fair use. I'm just not really sure where that would end up. It's a novel concept, and sometimes that's the way things are broken open, is through novel concepts.
Well, I know the NFL has gone after sports bars for allegedly illegal downloads of broadcast of NFL games, but the sports bar is privately owned. It's not a governmental entity, and apparently this guy's premise is that if taxpayers pay for it, it's a governmental entity, and all the people, you know.
Right. And, you know, you have seen the NFL go after even churches. They've gone last year, the year before, the NFL sent some cease and desist letters to churches who were planning Super Bowl parties.
And they got bad publicity over that, and they backed off.
And they should have. Yeah. And I think that's totally appropriate for them to have backed off on that. And sometimes the intellectual property rights that authors and copyright owners have are very important rights. They're constitutional rights. They're what our society as a technology society is built on. We don't produce as much goods any longer as we produce technology and those types of things. And intellectual property is becoming the main avenue of protecting what we do and how we make a living here.
It's a service-oriented economy.
Right, right. And I just don't think that it needs to be degraded completely through some of the types of overuse that it's getting, where the NFL trying to send cease and desist letters to churches, where people are trying to sue the government for political reasons and using copyright. Whenever I see those types of things, I cringe a little bit, because I think it takes away some bit of the teeth that copyright law should have to protect artists and to protect us as the consumers and as the public who benefits from the creations of all the artists. And that kind of worries me whenever I see those types of uses of copyright.
Okay. And with about a minute left, this has nothing to do with copyright per se, but it does touch on the emotional connection between the consumer and the product. Pete Townsend, founding father of The Who, hates downloads. He likes the personal experience of going into a CD store. He says, iTunes simply doesn't have heart. It is software attached to a bank, nothing more, nothing less. Brilliant, but heartless. Does the method by which the consumer acquires the music mean anything in terms of the emotional connection, or does he get his emotional satisfaction solely from the music?
That's very interesting. He says heartless. I mean, some people would say going into a store, brick-and-mortar store, is kind of heartless because it's ran by a company. It's corporate America. So I think there's always going to be a niche for those like him and myself who like going into a store and having a connection to maybe somebody who works there that knows a lot about music, and you can have a conversation. They can make some recommendations to you. There is some emotional connection that the human being needs there, and you don't get that from downloads. But I think the dominant way of doing business is going to be digital. I think a lot of it's going to be computer based, and a lot of it's going to be through downloads. There'll always be a niche for stores. There'll always be a reason for it. There are people who still collect vinyl for very good reasons, but it's going to be more of a niche than the dominant source of doing business. The business model is definitely going to be the digital model. It's definitely going to be technology based, and there's always going to be a need, though, to try to connect people. We can't just be islands in our apartments with our computer. We have a need as social beings to touch base with others. And I think that's what he's referring to, and I think that it's going to be a way to monetize that, even to make that part of the experience of buying music. We just don't know how that's going to be done yet, because it's all developing as we talk.
And we'll be talking more about it. Ken Senny, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. Catch us at mtsunews.com, and we're also available on iTunes.